Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, September 15th. I'm Stella Gerkins, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Supes field debate over vaccine peer pressure, Garberville enters Phase 2 drought plan, and new fire located in Six Rivers National Forest. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Following a data transmission failure yesterday between two State of California computer systems, local public health officials have confirmed today 90 new positive COVID-19 cases for the two-day period in Humboldt County. The total number of residents who have tested positive for the virus now stands at 7,984. Four new hospitalizations have been reported, including one person in their 30s, two in their 50s, and one over the age of 80. Public health officials continue to urge residents to get tested, particularly unvaccinated individuals, those experiencing symptoms, and those who have been in close contact with someone who has tested positive for the virus. Testing has declined slightly over the past few weeks, and wait times for walk-in vaccines are minimal. The turnaround time for PCR results is currently 48 to 72 hours. As of Tuesday, 74,761 Humboldt County residents have been fully vaccinated, or 55% of the county's total population. Slightly more than 70% of the vaccine-eligible population, age 12 and older, has received at least one dose. Free COVID-19 vaccines are available every day this week at public health clinics located throughout the county. Walk-ins are welcome, and appointments can be made in advance at myturn.ca.gov. There was division over vaccination as Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors discussed COVID-19 issues. Daniel Mintz reports.
The growing social divide between those who've been vaccinated for COVID-19 and those who haven't been was readily apparent at the most recent County Board of Supervisors meeting. The county's been in a surge, driven by the surprisingly contagious Delta variant strain, and hospitals have been struggling to keep up with demand for treatment. At the September 14th supervisors meeting, County Health Officer Dr. Ian Hoffman said controlling the surge and preventing another one will largely depend on vaccination. But as of the day of the meeting, the county's rate of full vaccination was at 54%, and Hoffman had named 75% as a goal for the statewide reopening that kicked off in mid-June. Answering a question from Supervisor Michelle Bushnell, Hoffman's recommendation to people who don't want to get vaccinated is to, quote, consider talking to people who have been vaccinated to get their opinions and look to leaders in your community who might be vaccinated and discuss it with them. Bushnell encouraged further conversation, saying, not everyone is choosing that path. But the resurgence of the virus is disheartening, and unvaccinated people are being blamed for it. Supervisor Steve Madrone suggested that if people don't get vaccinated, they should accept the consequences, which Bushnell responded to.
So I just would ask people that I respect that you want to make a choice to not take the vaccine, but maybe you might want to choose to not then get hospitalized afterwards to save those beds for those that need that. I don't know, you know, it sounds harsh, but really isn't that what we're doing, making choices here?
Supervisor Bushnell? I just want to say that if you're sick and you feel the need that you need to go to the hospital, I don't think that you need to go to the hospital. And people have choices. And I understand what you're saying, Steve. However, I'm not going to tell anybody that chooses not to get the vaccine that if you feel the need that you need to go to the hospital. I don't want to say that. And personally, I'm just not going to, medical free to medically choose is everybody's choice. And I understand that the vaccine's out there and that it's very difficult when we see people not choosing to utilize that and they get sick. But it's still, you know, our hospitals provide a service. And if you're sick and you need to go to the hospital, please do.
During a public comment session, a caller reacted to Madrone's comments and said the push for vaccination is divisive.
And I just want to say that whoever was discouraging people from going to a hospital, shame on you. That's really disgusting. We would never deny care to a drunk driver, a drug user, a cigarette smoker, or someone with obesity. It's just disgusting. And I believe it was Bushnell who would not back that statement up. And thank you for having some common sense. I personally have been vaccine injured, and I have a permanent medical exemption from all vaccines that I received many years ago. And this whole idea of mandates and this us against them is just really been upsetting and causing a lot of anxiety. I just want to say we need to unite, as one speaker said, everyone. And, I'm really upset that we would even encourage mandates. The vaccine has been known to spread. It does not stop the spread. We should be testing everyone. It shouldn't be just unvaccinated.
Also during public comment, a caller objected to workplace vaccination mandates, calling them a, quote, coercion factor, and noting that vaccinated people can still get COVID-19 and transmit it. Southern Humboldt resident Thomas Mulder agreed, saying that, quote, as a community, we need to stay away from us versus them. Nationwide, it's really political, and it's pretty disgusting. But a caller who said he's a county employee asked supervisors to enact a county employee vaccination mandate. Callers also questioned the effectiveness and safety of vaccines. Supervisor Mike Wilson compared unvaccinated people to drivers who blow through stop signs and vouched for the personal and societal benefits of vaccination.
Nothing we do is 100% effective in what we do. The reductions in these statistics of getting this disease or any other disease, and why we have public health in general and public health policy, is to basically take those numbers down enough that they are not endemic completely taking over everything. And so those reduced chances in a cumulative impact can actually take it down to almost zero. And we've seen that in disease after disease that we've actually had to battle in our society. Again, it's like a stop sign. It's like you stop at the stop sign, but it doesn't guarantee you're not going to get an accident, right? But blazing through those stop signs and ignoring them, definitely increases that capacity to both just not to injure yourself, but other people as well.
On September 13th, the county reported confirming 171 new cases since the end of the preceding week. One death of a person in their 70s and two new hospitalizations were reported. On the day of the meeting, the county reported that it was unable to confirm new cases due to a glitch in the state's public health computer system. But for the first time in more than a month, there were no new hospitalizations or deaths to report. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mentz.
Garberville Sanitary District has reached Phase 2 of its drought requirements. This means that customers must stop all outdoor watering, except for animals, vegetables, or fruit. KMA News spoke with Garberville Sanitary District General Manager Ralph Emerson to learn more.
Garberville Sanitary District provides water and wastewater service for the customers in Garberville and some of the surrounding area close to Garberville. So we are trying to make sure we provide enough water for personal use. And with the river as low as it is right now, we are implementing phase two of our drought contingency plan, which means outdoor watering will be prohibited. Anybody who has an agricultural water meter, those meters will be turned off. And the only water that can be used for outdoor use will be for animals or personal health and safety, but everything else is prohibited.
This is a step up from the first drought phase, which asks all customers to voluntarily reduce water consumption and was initiated when the South Fork Eel River reached 10 cubic feet per second flow rate. Furthermore, in phase two, commercial ag customers must also use an alternative water source.
We base our phases on the level of the river It's how many cubic feet per second of water go through the river. And a cubic feet, a foot of water is quite a bit every second. But right now, our trigger for phase two is an average of 7, which is based between 3 to 5 days. And currently, it's been fluctuating between 10 and 6.5 cubic feet per second. But rather than wait, we're close enough to an average of 7 that we felt today would be the day that we should do this. And so we've notified the cannabis farmers through the people that represent them, and then the customers we know ourselves that have ag meters, and are notifying them that they need to turn off all water to their outdoor grows and any other agricultural crops they may have, which could include orchards or plants, vegetation, lawns, et cetera. And those customers that we are aware of, we've called all of them or are calling all of them. So they are notified. And we have been keeping in touch with them all along. So most of them, probably all of them actually know that we wanted them to have rain catchment or water storage so that when this time comes, they can continue watering their crops or outdoor vegetation, gardens, lawns, et cetera, with their own water.
Emerson estimates that there are approximately 20 ag meter GSD customers that this applies to. However, residential customers are encouraged to cut back water use as well.
We are having the residential customers, voluntarily cut back at this time. The next phase will be mandatory reduction. And so that's where we're at right now. Is it's voluntary reduction. And what I've told, even when I talked to you the last time, what I recommend to all customers is to try and use your gray water for any water you do need outside, out of your sinks and showers. And then also what I do personally is I have 4 55-gallon plastic barrels that I fill with water. And then I have those to help me through days where we may not have water or when I need more water. And that's what I'd recommend to everybody.
According to the Garberville Sanitary District website, noncompliance may result in water discontinuance. For more information, go to the Garberville Sanitary District website at garbervillesd.org.
My website has all the phases of our drought plan and where the cubic feet per second is that initiates that plan. And it's based on an average of 3 to 5 days. But that also on that site, it's on the first page of our website, and it'll have the site we use, the local districts use to show the flow in the river. So people can monitor that themselves and see when it's getting close and start making arrangements for storing their own water or be ready to conserve more water.
Tune into tomorrow's broadcast for an update from the Redway Community Services District. A new fire, dubbed the Campbell Fire, was located this morning in the Campbell Creek drainage south of Hoopa. The fire is just south of Hoopa Tribal Lands in the Six River National Forest. This morning, Hoopa Fire Department Chief Greg Moon posted the following update.
Hey folks, here on the Campbell Fire, we've got hose lay around one side. The Forest Service has arrived on scene. They're going down on the Forest Service side. Our folks have hooked the side that's closest to the reservation, and now we're going to be attacking all fronts. A helicopter's on scene, got 4 engines on scene. We've got a dozer coming, and we have folks working diligently to get this thing out for sure. That's an update. I think the size is probably around 5 acres.
Campbell, I see you calling engine 331.
And there's a lot of burning snags falling. Right now, we're just trying to get hose lay around it, and we're pretty darn close. Okay. I'm really hopeful we'll catch this and we'll be able to hold on to it for the rest of the day.
According to an update from the Six Rivers National Forest Facebook page this morning, forward progress is being made on the fire. Hose lay is now around the perimeter of the fire. Air attack and tanker have been released, while ground resources remain on site. Further information obtained from the Six Rivers National Forest, U.S. Forest Service, says that forward motion has been stopped, and they will continue with mop-up efforts. The fire has not yet been called controlled until more mop-up is done of the interior. This is difficult due to the nature of the terrain. In other Six Rivers National Forest news, the USDA Forest Service Pacific Southwest Region will end the regional closure order affecting Six Rivers National Forest at 11:59 p.m. on Wednesday, September 15th, 2 days prior to the original end date of September 17th. Regional Forester Jennifer Eberlein said, quote, "We are constantly evaluating weather and fire conditions in California, as well as regional and national firefighting resources available to us so that we can ensure the safety of the public and our firefighters. Some factors are more favorable now, which is why I decided to end the regional closure order. I want to thank the public and our partners for their patience and understanding during these challenging times." End quote. Some of the factors leading to this decision include, first, the anticipated increase of firefighting resource availability to California due to fire danger lessening in other areas of the country. Second, regional weather systems and related climate zones are becoming more variable as the seasons change, leading to less uniform conditions across California. Where weather and fire danger remain high, tailored fire restrictions and closures remain in place locally and may be added where necessary. Third, peak summer visitation has tapered off significantly since the Labor Day holiday weekend. The public is a critical partner in mitigating risk and recreating responsibly on national forests. And finally, recognizing the important role of national forests to people's livelihood and quality of life. Favorable fire conditions remain throughout many parts of the state, and the public's role in recreating responsibly has never been more important. Six Rivers National Forest and neighboring forest Shasta Trinity will be opening Wednesday at midnight. However, forest-wide closures will remain in place and be extended until midnight on September 22nd on the Los Padres, Angeles, San Bernardino, and Cleveland National Forests in Southern California due to local weather and fire factors, as well as a temporary strain on firefighting resources supporting large fires in other areas of the state. In addition to the four national forests that will remain closed in Southern California, some national forest system lands throughout the state will be closed under local closure orders in areas of ongoing wildfires to ensure public safety. This includes the El Dorado National Forest in Northern California, which has a forest closure order until September 30th. Fire restrictions also remain in place across all national forests in California to prevent new fire starts. Please refer to the local national forest that you plan to visit to obtain specific information on closures and restrictions. Turning to Mendocino, the Hopkins Fire is currently at 257 acres and 65% contained. Mendocino County Sheriffs posted the following update this Wednesday morning.
Good morning. I'm Mendocino County Sheriff Matt Kendall. We're out here September 15th, but early in the morning. We wanted to bring you up to speed on what's going on the Hopkins Fire. There's been a lot of work done over the last 24 hours. We're beginning to get some place. A lot of mop-up, and so we're going to let our unit chief, George Gonzalez with CAL FIRE, discuss that with us.
Good morning. We had a great night last night, followed up with a great day yesterday. We had great progress. We're putting out a lot of smokes, a lot of the hot spots within the area. We did notice and observe a lot of falling trees. A lot of power poles are being replaced by PG&E. They're actually flying in power poles and setting them today. There is a lot of hazardous smoke in the area, and there is still remaining hotspots in the area that we'll be addressing today. So far, it is a very successful mission, and we anticipate that today we'll be able to get our arms around this and actually put more hotspots out, allowing us to go interior into the fire much more for the remaining hotspots. Thank you.
So we're going to have some changes in the closures. As a matter of fact, we're getting ready to populate some of the areas, and I'm going to ask our patrol commander, Greg Van Patten, to discuss that.
Yes, as the chief had mentioned, the progress that has been made is to our advantage to go ahead and allow for some repopulation and changes in the road closures. And I want to urge the public to go out to MendoReady.org. There's an interactive map out there that you can look by specific address, specific area, and you can see the changes that are going to be effective come 8 o'clock this morning, Wednesday, September 15th. Those information that you'll see out there for the repopulation is we're going to be repopulating the entire Eastside Calpella Road area. What will remain under evacuation order will be the areas of Marina Drive, Rubicon Court, Black Oak Drive, and the northern portion of Lake Ridge Road. As a result, our road closures are going to change to the following. Highway 20 at Marina Drive will stay intact. The north gate on Lake Ridge Road will stay intact. Marina Drive at Eastside Calpella Road will be a new road closure. And again, to reemphasize that we will repopulate and the actual thoroughfare of Eastside Calpella Road in its entirety will be open to traffic. With this caution, is the public needs to be aware there will be one-way controlled traffic on Eastside Calpella Road in the area of Moore Street, and that's going to be because of that utility work that's going to be ongoing to restore all the utility services here to the residents within Calpella. And again, just to emphasize, public, please go out to MendoReady.org to see that interactive map that will show the evacuation order areas, the evacuation warning areas, and these change in road closures. Thank you.
Now, up Marina Drive all the way up to the lake, the utility companies are going to be using heavy equipment and helicopters to set new poles. We've got a lot of damage to trees. When the helicopter prop wash is going to be blowing down on them, we expect that to get dangerous underneath there. We can't have anyone in there. So again, I wanted to thank you for your continued patience. We're doing everything that we can to get you home as soon as we can. Thank you.
On Tuesday, September 14th, CAL FIRE Mendocino Unit Chief George Gonzalez took KZYX's Alicia Bales on a tour of the 257 acres of the Hopkins Fire Burn Zone. KZYX's Alicia Bales reports.
The toll of this fire is evident as soon as you cross the Moore Street Bridge over the Russian River to Eastside Calpella Road, where half a dozen houses were lost right along the river. The destruction and intensity of this fire were overwhelming, but there were also many houses that had been spared. According to Chief Gonzalez, things could have been much worse. Our first stop was on the ridge on Rubicon Court, where we could see much of the Hopkins Fire Burn Zone below.
Wow.
So if you look across the drainage here, you can see the severity zones. When the fire was more aggressively running, it just leaves the burnt branches behind.
It's just everything is just blackened.
Yeah. And then you can see, like, on the very top on the next ridge over, where the air tankers were putting retardant lines to keep it from spreading.
Oh, wow. So the fire just crawls up the water courses.
Yeah, correct. It aggressively runs up these steep drainages. And that's when we try to keep up with it with the air tankers and engines and dozers.
We're still going up Marina Drive. Another home lost. So now we're coming into the recreation area.
Yep. Tree was down right here.
So this is where the Shakota Trail starts.
So yeah, this went right to the water's edge.
Yep, all the way. All the way out Marina Drive to the water's edge. Was this something that you, if you've been out to this area, were you concerned about it before?
Yes. 5 years ago, I would have said, yeah, this is an area I'm concerned about. I'd say Regina Heights is another area I'm concerned about.
Uh-huh.
Brook Trails is a continuous concern. That would have been a few years ago. Now, this entire county is this susceptible to fire. The entire county. I like that. At least the kids' play structure and everything's still there.
Yeah. What's the other side of this? Is it over by the dam? Did it get that far?
No.
So now we're turning out Lake Ridge Road.
So I got up here. I was looking. I'm okay. We got the lake there. We had dozers coming up on that side. And from the dozer line, we had the air tankers assisting them with retardant line. And then we were doing the same thing on that far side where the one structure was consumed and the one was saved. Same thing, we're coming up both sides. But if you can see the house directly beneath you, it got painted with retardant because the fire was here.
So you've got on the right, there's the house, I don't know if that's a house or a structure destroyed, and then below it, there's a pink roof you can see.
Yeah.
And the retardant, it just like if the embers fall on the roof, it'll just stop it from igniting.
Yep, correct.
And a whole bunch of pink trees over there in the distance too.
Yeah. All this is pink. This is where we're making the stand. This is all that from the other side where we looked across. This is a dozer line, the hose lay, where we got on both sides of it and just started up the hill from the bottom down there. And this is kind of where you start to tie everything together. And we take a hose lay, we tie it into a dozer line, an air tanker line, and continue from there. So this was essentially the blueprint of it. Mm-hmm. Our concern was we knew we had a valid point right here, the lake, to be able to use the water and the air tanker drops to stop it. But the concern was if we don't hold it on the Highway 20 side, it's going to keep on going to the east, up and over, and it's going to burn, you know, eventually Redwood Valley, Potter Valley, and all those areas. So it was a really aggressive attack by everybody just trying to keep it within this blueprint.
We're super close to Redwood Valley. It's right across the highway there.
Yeah.
In the same area that burned in 2017.
It could have been in that same blueprint.
With today's triple-digit temperatures and afternoon winds, the question on everyone's mind, of course, is when residents who are still under evacuation orders will be able to return.
Do you have any idea when people are going to be allowed back in?
No, we're trying to do it the second PG&E is done and corresponding with no hotspots, which you can see we're looking pretty good.
Yeah.
As far as smoke, the troops have really been out there. Last night they made a lot of progress. So we're trying to correspond with both of those. Hopeful for tomorrow or the next day.
For the KZYX News, this is Alicia Bales. To see photos of the Hopkins Fire Zone and all of our local stories, visit kzyx.org.
In state news, numerous news organizations, including the Associated Press, project that the recall attempt against Governor Gavin Newsom has failed. At the time of this report, 63.9% of the state has voted no on the question of whether or not Gavin Newsom should be recalled. If a majority said yes, Larry Elder would be the projected winner to replace Newsom with 46.9% of the votes. Newsom said in a tweet following this projection, quote, "Tonight, California voted no on the recall and said yes to science, women's rights, immigrant rights, the minimum wage, the environment, our future. We rejected cynicism and bigotry and chose hope and progress. Thank you, California." End quote. In Humboldt County, an election night final report trended the same as the state results. 65.89% voted no when asked if Gavin Newsom should be recalled from the office of governor, while 34.11% voted yes. Again, Larry Elder led with the most votes for candidate to succeed Newsom as governor if recalled, with 44.26 of the votes compared to any other candidate. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz and Alicia Bales. KMA News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, related documents, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, Give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Stella Gerkins.